Welcome to the Men of Aid Gang podcast for Saturday, July 31st, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Summer's two-thirds over.
Oh, don't even go there. Phil Wilson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Glass Half Full.
Yeah, no kidding. It makes me sad.
Okay, Steve, I can't hear our music, so I can't make my usual comment about your music.
Yeah, what happened to the music?
Oh, you can't. Well, you know what I did is because it takes a full hour. If we record for an hour, it takes a full hour in Pro Tools to bounce to disc. So yeah. I spent a few hours and I completely revamped the way I record, and I'm using GarageBand.
Where exactly do you get this time to do these things? I'm always so impressed.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
Well, yeah. I ended up watching Inglourious Basterds last night, so I did carve out some fun time. Anyway,
that's a great movie.
Yeah. It is. Give us some Nazis. Yeah.
So which one? That would be a good name for the gang.
Inglourious Basterds. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Inglourious Basterds.
So I'm assuming it's a Tarantino version, not the original.
It is the Tarantino version. Yeah. Yeah.
The original is on Netflix streaming, and it is hilarious in its own way.
Is it? Oh, maybe I'll have to watch it. The thing that amazed me about the Tarantino thing is after a movie, I always go to IMDb and look at the trivia and stuff like that. And Quentin Tarantino like packs every possible innuendo and trivia thing into his movies. You know, there's like a reason for everything, or somebody's name is based on some famous director or some actor, and just incredible. So we should.
That was that video store experience before he became a director.
Exactly. He's probably seen every movie ever made.
But the setup of that movie, the opening scene is one of the greatest in Tarantino history. At least in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done.
And to hear all that dialogue, the great dialogue that he writes, but to hear it in French and German is just astounding.
Yeah.
You know, I've come to the conclusion that Tim is quite the movie buff. And you know how I know this, Tim, in the background?
His pasty complexion?
No, his Blippi purchases. So I see all his Blippi purchases whenever he grabs something. What he's doing, you know.
Yeah,
there's
so that's
no privacy left anymore.
Yeah, that's just Amazon, or not Amazon, it's Netflix. So anytime I flip up a Netflix, so we're in the middle of season 3 of Lost. We never saw Lost when it was on, and we only got interested right when they were ending. So we've been through almost through three seasons now.
Wow.
So you'll see us watch a couple episodes of Lost in a night. Here and there. So.
You know, can I ask you guys a question? You know,
you're going to ask the same question I'm going to ask. Do they actually put the title of the movie you rent on the bill?
Yep.
Oh, no.
I thought you meant on Blippi.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Blippi, so all of those girls at the car wash movies that you watch, Phil, are going to be on the bill. Is that the problem?
Oh, obviously. See, this is one of the reasons I didn't sign up for Blippi. So
yeah. Well, but here's the thing. Darren Klum, who was one of the founders of Hardcore Computing, that we'll talk about a little bit later, has a new adventure. He's part of the Minnesota Cup, one of the semifinalists. And it has to do with movies, and it has to do with high quality movies, and so on. He's not really revealing a whole lot, but let me ask you guys a question, because I'm just curious about what your take is. How important is high quality when you're watching movies? I mean, would you watch a movie on a regular DVD, or would you have to go get the Blu-ray version?
It depends on what I'm watching it on. I mean, if I'm watching it on if I'm watching it on a monitor, on my computer screen, I'd expect some fairly decent quality. If I'm watching it on a big screen with the family, I want the best quality I can get. But I don't necessarily think I'm going to run out and get a Blu-ray over a DVD to do that. I really love the Blu-ray experience, but I don't think I would necessarily need it.
Yeah, right. I think sound is more important than picture to me, because even though you can tell the difference between Blu-ray and a regular DVD, it's not a huge problem. You get used to it, I guess. And my Blu-ray player does a pretty good job of upconverting the DVD anyway.
Mine too, yeah.
So as long as you've got a good mix, and I like the DTS mixes, And most DVD movies don't have that, but all Blu-rays do, strangely enough. Huh. So there's just more bits there. So the sound is better through the system. So that's more important to me than the picture quality. So, but I still look for Blu-ray every chance I get. And one of the things that surprised me this week, and this is a news item that I saw came out yesterday, but we actually rented the movie from Redbox, I don't know, when Tuesday or Wednesday, is that Redbox now has Blu-ray discs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. At least down here in Lakeville. So,
Phil, well, we're fairly cutting edge. So,
Phil, it's over by Rainbow at the Walgreens.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. Huh. And they have two boxes and, yeah. So I got Green Zone, which is an okay movie. I thought it was going to be better than
it was okay. Yeah. It was okay.
It's okay. But in Blu-ray, it was nice. Huh. And it's $1.50 instead of $1.
Well, see, okay. It's really interesting because my wife and I got into this conversation. She could care less about Blu-ray. She says, you know, it's not worth the price, the delta. And of course, I love watching movies like 7 Days in Tibet with Brad Pitt, with the scenery of Tibet in Blu-ray. Oh, my God. But for the most part, she could care less. And so when we started talking about Google TV and Apple TV and these other devices coming out, and it's all going to be HD quality, quote unquote, but it'll be highly compressed 720p. Video files just, you know, hold up their noses at that. But it kind of feels like mainstream humans are going to say, that's good. That's pretty good. And I like having the on-demand capability.
Yeah, to tie it back to the Netflix streaming is that the picture quality is pretty good of the HD content there in the streams. The they need to improve sound though. Sound is not great, but yeah. We watch it because, you know, it's, I mean, I don't think Lost was in 5.1 Dolby when it was out anyway. Maybe the last couple seasons were. So I don't think we're missing a whole lot from the sound department, but if they get the sound down, so they get multi-track stuff, you know, 5.1 kind of deal, that it's going to be very compelling to a lot of people,
right?
Just because you've got the on demand for, you know, this thousands of tens of thousands of movies, I guess, now they've got on their service. The sound of on demand in the cable, at least here in Charter land, is they do have 5.1. So that may be an advantage that cable has over something like Netflix, is they have enough bandwidth to deliver that better sound experience.
Well, you know, I've always been on this kind of quest for better audio quality. So, you know, I think that we're so much more capable of audio quality above the MP3 online. So, you know, that I love quality, but I honestly believe that most people don't really care.
Yeah, I think for the most part. Well, speaking of bandwidth, you mentioned bandwidth. Best Buy is going to offer fast mobile broadband through Clearwire. And Clearwire is that WiMAX adventure. Right. Now, wasn't that Craig McCaw? Didn't he start Clearwire? He was the former Cellular One or whatever.
Seattle-based.
Yeah. And when I saw, you know, I've kind of been tracking these guys anyway, and since I worked for Vignette, they somehow have my home set up as a Vignette business. So we get calls, get stuff sent all the time, as a company. Clearwire was one of the ones that came after us real hard. So they're definitely going to roll out this fall. But, you know, I went and looked at the site when I got this mailing. I got this big postcard, and it's not fast. I mean, it's, you know, a couple minutes per second.
Yeah, I was going to say, define fast. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's certainly not going to be something you're going to watch Netflix streaming movies on, for the most part.
No, I think it's 2 megabits, so it wouldn't even be compatible with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So one interesting note, though, is earlier in the month, they announced their own streamings or their own broadband service for laptops called Best Buy Connect.
Oh yeah, right.
That's sort of, I think it's a white label of somebody else's, And I don't think it was Clearwire. So this is kind of an interesting thing where they're actually subsidizing notebook computers, laptop computers at Best Buy's that have the integrated 3G.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And so you sign up for a contract for their Best Buy Connect service for whatever it is, you know, and you get up to $275 off the laptop, which is interesting. And so I'm wondering how different that is from the Clearwire.
Well, isn't that Sprint that they did that with, that they got that from? And they're saying $30 to $60 a month is what the story said.
Yeah.
Although it didn't say Sprint, I don't think, but I'm just assuming it's got to be Sprint, which, of course, owns 54% of the Clearwire venture and is looking at buying it all or having to bankroll the whole thing. Clearwire is not rolling out fast enough. And I was going to say, Steve, there still haven't been any predictions yet of when that 4G's come to the Twin Cities, is there?
Well, I read two articles where they have not made an official statement, but I've read two articles that said this fall. And
Read a bunch of articles that said, you know, June. So
it's not going very fast. And there's a lot of major cities they are not in yet. And that thing is going to take just a ton of money to roll out. And, Sprint's got an advantage right now with 4G that nobody else, you know, nobody else is there yet. And they're quickly losing their advantage unless they can get this thing rolled out. And I read a piece in the Wall Street Journal where there's conjecture that they might be trying to buy the rest of it so they can control it more and goose it or something. You know, it's like, Sprint's not happy with how fast Clearwire's going. And so they want to influence that more. But anyway, this Best Buy thing is something that's largely about 2000 or 2011, is it not? It's not, I don't recall it being anything that's going to be happening real soon here yet.
Right.
Well, the only thing that makes sense is that, you know, Clearwire is also targeting the, you know, home consumer too with hookups. It's not just the 3G or 4G laptop cards. So what they may be getting in position for is a play where you go down to Best Buy and buy one of their modems, and then you hook that up in place of, you know, cable or DSL, and you get your 4G over the 4G modem. So that's probably what they're thinking of long term. But the speeds, as Steve said, the speeds are not compelling right now for the price.
Right.
I mean, $30 bucks for 2 megabits seems high to me. If it was like $10, $15 a month, yeah, then you'd have something, I think.
Well, and you know, the investments that are being made on the wireless broadband side from the AT&T and Verizon, and AT&T won't disclose exactly what they're spending this year, but they announced in January they were going to have a 5-10% increase over last year. And I remember a $13.1 billion number, and they're going to increase by $2 billion this year, how much they are spending. And so you look at that and you say, how the hell is Clearwire going to be able to do this? Especially with, you know, HSDPA, the true 4G mobile broadband, which is going to be, what, 5-6 megabit per second down?
I think it's up to 7.
Really? Yeah. I mean, how are they going to be able to compete?
It's going to be very difficult for them. Verizon's coming out with LTE. In fact, there's rumor that the next iPhone will support that. So they'll probably call it the iPhone 4G.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I'm sure that the iPad will also be Verizon centric as well. But that's going to be very difficult for them unless they're able to deliver better pricing and equivalent or better service. And I just don't see it at this point.
Yeah.
So Tim, I also get that feeling that you're buying into the iPhone is coming to Verizon story. Is that what you're
saying? Oh, absolutely. I believe that the iPhone will come to T-Mobile before it comes to Verizon, though, because
they're compatible. Yeah.
It's a 3G, or not 3G, it's a GSM.
GSM.
Yeah. Yep.
And even though it doesn't do the right band for 3G right now, it's pretty trivial for them to get another chip that will support that.
And when do you think that's going to happen, oh wise one?
I think it's going to be pretty quick. I would hope it would be by the holiday season. So, you know, they're going to have another Steve note in September, which is where they introduce the new iPods and things like that. I wouldn't be surprised to see a bumped iPhone, particularly after we saw the whole antenna gate thing. And that may be the solution to it, where they say, hey, we've fixed it. And by the way, it's available on T-Mobile now, too.
Right. There have been reports that they're in talks and conjecture that T-Mobile could be named the second carrier even before Verizon. But I'm predicting that we may have both of them by the end of the year. You know, I mean, it's sure sounding like that. That's a possibility.
So maybe you should hold out longer, Graham, for your iPhone 4 just to see what happens.
Well, yeah, I have a T-Mobile account, too. In our family. So, you know, I've got both those bases covered. I don't have a Verizon account, but my iPhone 4 order, I've had it in for over a month and still haven't heard back. I think they lost it. They think, or either that, or they think I want a white one, and I don't. I just want the old black one and haven't heard a word and been too busy to follow up. But I think I got to replace my order because they're probably in general availability now, aren't they, Steve?
Well, my daughter ended up going to two. She floated to two other stores in the Twin Cities that had inventory, and also my sons showed up. We had to reorder because I bought two of them on the day I bought my own that I'd reserved, and then I got a second one and gave it to my wife. Well, I kept the one that I had on order for her, and then I get an email a couple weeks ago saying that they were canceling the order. Then I had to call customer service, and I called, and turns out that it was affixed to my wife's number, but then she'd already gotten one, and we couldn't transfer the order to my son's phone number. So I had to reorder. But here's the kicker. The kicker is it wasn't due to come in until Tuesday, but he got it on Thursday of last week, this past Thursday.
Yes. So they're out there. They're available. And my God, they just announced 17 more countries.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's 22 countries they're selling them now. So, you know, why am I having trouble getting mine here in Minneapolis?
But how did we do this? How did we slip back into talking about the friggin' iPhone? What?
Just because we knew it would
it
bug you.
Comes back.
That's right. I'll just hold just mine. I'll hold mine. Well, but you guys, you and Tim have Android phones, and what's the deal with Froyo? What's going on with Froyo? Android update.
They're rolling out, what is it, 2.2, right, Tim? And it
that's Froyo. Frozen yogurt.
Frozen yogurt coming out.
Working on gingerbread for later this year. Seriously, that's what the next version is called.
Oh, God.
So that would be gingerbread? Ginbree? Is that what it'll be?
It's gingerbread just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for Christmas. So, yeah, supposedly that's going to be pushing out to Sprint phones this week. Supposedly start August 1. I keep checking to see if it's going to pop into my updates, but so far it hasn't.
So what's the big deal about it? Why do you guys care?
It's the iPhone killer. Yeah, that's it.
Sure.
Dream on, little dreamer.
there are a lot of tweaks. Tim, you know the drill a whole lot better than I do.
Well, I think the biggest one is the Wi-Fi tethering. Yeah. Since 2.1, they've supported USB tethering natively. Now, some of the carriers may have turned it off. So Phil, Sprint may have turned that off, but it is part of that build. Mm-hmm. And Wi-Fi makes it sort of like a MiFi, where you can share it with, I don't know, I think it's 5 or 8 other devices, and it creates its own little Wi-Fi bubble. And I think that makes it very useful because it, instead of having to carry your Wi-Fi card and your phone, you've got one device. Some carriers are charging extra for it. I know that that Sprint is, I think, what are they getting, $20 or $25 a month extra for that?
Yes, $29, I believe.
Which is better than paying, what, $30 or $40? I don't know. What do you pay, Graham, for your 3G card?
I ditched that quite a while ago. And I was just going to ask, Steve, are you getting tethering on AT&T for any of these iPhones you're getting?
No.
That $15 a month grandfathered thing? Well, if you're under the old data plan, that's what I am.
Yes. And so I've got unlimited data on the phones, But if I upgrade, so for example, if I wanted to upgrade my phone to the tethering and I chose the 256 or a megabyte or 250 megs or the 5 gig plan for tethering, I would lose my unlimited data. And so you
effectively can't get tethering.
I effectively can't get tethering unless the jailbreak comes out.
Right. Well, I was told you could, if you were an existing AT&T customer, you know, an old iPhone customer, that you could get tethering for just $15 a month.
You can, but then you lose your unlimited data. That's the kicker.
Oh, you do? Okay, yes. That wasn't explained to me. Okay.
Yes, you got to be very cautious of that. And in fact, iPad 3G, they did have a very short window where they allowed when the 3G iPad came out that you could get unlimited tethering on it, but it had to be by, you know, they gave you like a week after it came out. And if you didn't jump on it, too bad.
So if you stay with your unlimited data plan, what is the tethering cost, did you say?
Well,
it's two levels or something?
No, you can't get tethering. If you decide you want to go to tethering with the phone, then you lose your unlimited data on the phone.
Oh, you have to go to their new plan.
Yep. Okay. Period. Yeah. There's just no in and out. There's no
option. Well, I think I'm going to do that then because I'm not a heavy user anyway. I'm not watching movies on my, you know, or any. Yeah. You know, I think I'm going to do that. The tethering. Did you do that then to get tethering?
Nope. Well, I have no tethering. No, I'm waiting for the iPhone 4 jailbreak. Not that I'm going to do it, but. I have a friend who did his 3GS and was using a little app called MyWi, which he paid $10 for and had tethering. But he, my friend, ended up needing it only sporadically with his iPad when he was at events doing live blogging, things of that nature. So it was very intermittent use, but it was to get him out of a pinch now and then. Huh. That's really the only reason a guy like me would want that.
Sure.
So anyway.
Hey, I got a question for the Android phone users. I read where there's all this bloatware that you get on your Android phones, and it's a bitch to get rid of. You know, these provided programs that come with your phone.
Yeah.
Have you guys figured out how to get rid of all that bloatware?
The only way to do it is to root it.
You got to root your phone.
Yeah. And there's no root for the phone that I have yet. So, it's a problem because what they do is one of the problems with Android, and it's becoming less of a problem now that Froyo supports the ability to install apps on a SD card. But up to now, you have a limited amount of storage for apps. And so, you know, someone like me who has about 200 iPhone apps on my iPod Touch, there's no way that I can have 200 apps on my phone. Now, the good news is there's not 200 really good Android apps yet. I haven't had that problem yet, but it is a problem. And so they have like Telenav, which is a navigation program, which I've never used ever. I've never even done the 30-day trial on Telenav, but I can't uninstall it and install an app that I want on the phone, which I think is a real problem. So
yeah, with me, when I picked up the Evo, there are a lot of apps. There are a lot of apps on there that I would just as soon get out.
That's Sprint doing that.
Yeah, right? It's just, you know, I don't really care about Sprint NASCAR or Sprint TV or any of that. And I just as soon pull it out because I'm anal retentive enough that I like a nice, neat and tidy phone. But at the same time, I just leave them in the unused app section and just don't use them, and they just sit there. So.
Yeah. The other big feature of Froyo is that it supports Flash 10.1. Mm-hmm. So Phil will be able to go to YouTube and without the app.
Yep. Wow. I'm pretty excited about that. I'm also hoping that it addresses battery life to some extent. I was talking
with Flash.
No. But I mean, as far as Froyo, I was talking to Brian Nagy at Recursive Awesome, and he said that there is some talk that Froyo will address battery life to some extent. I just hope it does. So.
Yeah, you'd think it would be more optimized. So
yeah,
but I wouldn't watch a lot of flash on it because that's going to burn the battery like nobody's business.
So does tethering.
Even though the Evo is really the video, phone because of the huge screen, I don't spend a lot of time watching video on my mobile. So I'm not too worried about that.
Do you read ebooks on it?
Do I read ebooks? No, I have a hard enough set time seeing my big screen, much less the screen to read the book. But hey, now that I've got my new bifocals, right, maybe I can. But no, I have not.
Yeah. Because it's interesting that the ebook reader war has intensified now that Amazon has answered back with their $140 Kindle. So I predict that by the end of the year we're going to see $99 Kindles. And when you get to a price that's that cheap for something like that, then it becomes, I think it makes sense actually, because you could actually save money, because if you buy, I don't know, 10 books a year, something like that, it'd probably be cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including the price of the Kindle.
Yeah. They're saying Amazon's now losing money. But it's driving book sales. So it seems like a good strategy to them. And every time the Nook drops their price, Amazon instantaneously goes lower than them, So it's a price war in black and white ebook readers.
Which clearly indicates there's still plenty of room for lower prices because they're obviously marking up that technology. So.
Well, I think it's a play to who's going to be the provider of the books. And I think that Amazon understands they're in the book business. They're not in the Kindle business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're probably selling more Kindle books to people that have iPads and iPhones than they do to Kindle users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be interesting to know.
Yeah, Apple won't say, I suppose.
Well, no, I don't think Amazon would say either, but I'll bet you, because there's way more iPhones and iPod Touches and iPads out there than there are Kindles. So it only would make sense. Now, I'm sure that Kindle users, especially ones that have had it for 2 or 3 years, they're probably hardcore book readers, so they buy a lot. But even if, people bought one book on their iPhone or iPad, that's this millions
that adds
of millions.
Up.
Yeah.
When you look at 100 million iPod Touch iPhone users, if they each bought one book, that's a biggie, Bezos has come out and said that, the Kindles are really directed at heavy book buyers, which is maybe 10% of the population. I don't think he really cares or expects that the Kindle is going to be bought all that heavily by the other 90%, it's heavy book readers that are buying those things.
Closer you get to $100 though, that's when it goes mainstream.
A little bit more towards mass, but I don't know that it'll ever be a mass item really, 50% of the population owning one ain't going to happen, I don't think.
I think that if you get a tablet computer, kind of iPad-like, we will never see an iPad, I don't think, for $199. We might see something for $399 or something like that down the road. But there will be Android tablets that I think will be in that $199 price point or maybe slightly above. And when you get... right. <No. laughs> But when you get to something like that, so you have a full color multi-use device, so you can read books on it, you can watch movies and all that. And even if it's not as big of screen, so let's say it's like 7 inches instead of the 10 inches on the iPad, you still have something that's compelling that a lot of people will want. I mean, I know I'll want one of those because it's something you could carry around with you.
Yeah. Well, one of the Japanese companies just announced a couple of devices, and one of them was in that range, was sort of a large iPod Touch,
Well, there's one that's at Kmart of all places, that's some no-name brand that I popped up on Engadget last night, where it's an Android 2.1, 7-inch, $150.
Where did you say for sale it?
At Kmart. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Oh, God.
It's funny. I mean, they have sort of, they don't have a review, but they have sort of first impressions, and it's, you know, it's a resistive screen. So that's, the screen is pretty bad, but you know, $150, I guess you put up with a lot of annoyances.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had to go pick up my wife at the airport, and it turns out the flight was 40 minutes late, but it wasn't on the status page. So here I am with a, you know, an extra half hour or so to kill. So I swung into Walmart along 494 down by the airport to see what technology they had. I know. Go ahead and laugh. It's actually a nice Walmart.
Walmarts are very nice, but still,
yeah. And I hadn't been in it since I'd been redone.
I'm killing some time, so I think I'll go to Walmart.
I think I'll go to Walmart. pick me up a NASCAR T-shirt.
We're all going to the Apple Store at Mall of America, Phil.
He's
been there so many times.
Yeah.
He's got to get out and learn new things. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so
he's got to hang with the commoners.
Yeah, right.
So what I ended up doing was walking over the laptops, and on the end cap, they had a $298 Acer 15 inch. It had an AMD chip in it, 3 gigs of RAM, 250 gig hard drive. And it was actually a fairly nice looking laptop. $298, you know, Wi-Fi and a webcam. It was a laptop. Okay. And so, you know, you keep reading these things about tablet computers for $50 that are coming and so on and so forth. Well, here's the bottom line. This whole category is going to continue to explode. There's going to be so many opportunities for people to have Jolly Cloud or Google OS, you know, Chrome OS on these netbooks or on small laptops. I think we're going to see an explosion of form factors even beyond what we've even hinted at. And what kind of opportunities will that present to developers and to startups that have cloud-based things? Plus, Tim, you and I have been talking about cloud-based things for a new hosting adventure. And isn't it amazing the stuff that's out with Rackspace cloud sites and now WordPress, WP Engine, all these other platforms that have come out for hosting? It just seems like the space is accelerating.
It is, but at the same time, there are only a handful of really good web hosts, and there's all sorts of trade-offs. So you can get a dedicated box from a whole bunch of people, but you have to have like a sysadmin guy to be able to set up and maintain that. And then if you're hit with any traffic, you know, it could fall over, your hard drive can die. You know, there's all sorts of problems. So when you look at a cloud solution, there's not a whole lot out there. And I think that the cloud sites from Rackspace looks really good. In fact, I'm a migrating customer today to it. So it looks really, really good. So it's one of those things where I think they're slightly ahead of the rest of the pack, and it'll be interesting to see what Visy does here locally with their cloud services. It's clearly an area there's going to be a lot of growth, because I think a lot of people just don't want to manage their own infrastructure. You know, you look at GigaOm and TechCrunch. I mean, they're on WordPress.com.
Right, and the VIP program, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I'm getting to that too. I don't want to have to manage my own infrastructure for my own blogs. Yeah. It's a pain in the butt.
Yep, it is.
So having a service like a Cloud Sites is going to be important going forward.
But don't you think, though, too, that it's going to, that the demand for hosted solutions and for the ability for people to pick and choose these one-click installs for wikis and blog engines and all of that, don't you think that's going to continue to accelerate?
Oh, yeah. Everyone has to compete with that. And you look at various hosts from Bluehost to Dreamhost, even Media Temple to a certain extent. They all have one-click installs. And it's in more or less, and it's important for ease of use and maintenance to have those for users.
Yep.
So,
Well, let's jump on to a couple of announcements or buzz or whatever we want to talk about that you had mentioned, Graham, about and Stratus and hardcore computing. What's going on there?
Speaking of cloud, there's a lot happening, and I mean cloud is just huge. You know, spending on cloud computing is going to rise 34% a year through 2014, IDC says. So we've got a lot going on in that space, and a couple local players in Stratus announced at the Black Hat USA conference this past week that they've been selected by the Cloud Security Alliance to be the cloud management platform for a new user certification program that they're introducing. It's a pretty big deal for our local guys, and getting talked about a lot. It's getting them even more and more on the radar. I think we're going to be hearing, you know, more and more good things from that company, which, as you know, is kind of a spinoff of Valtira. And George Reese is the CTO. He keeps up an amazing schedule out at these conferences and is very locked into the whole cloud security and compliance area, which is a huge issue, and they're right in front of it. Our friends down in Rochester, Hardcore Computer, who we've heard about for a few years now, they actually demoed at one of our mini demos. That's got to be a couple years ago, right? They landed $25 million in VC from a Wisconsin-based fund that is actually a new Milwaukee VC fund called Capital Midwest Fund 2. And this is a big deal. They're right in the center of the whole data center explosion, if you will, with liquid cooled servers that could have a big place in data centers. At least they're betting they will, because of power and cooling requirements being such a huge issue with data centers. So that's a big deal. I haven't heard a whole lot more about it, but it makes you wonder if these guys aren't nearing some sort of a deal with a major technology vendor or something. At least, I would certainly think that could be a possibility. The company is headquartered, or the CEO anyway, is in Rochester. At least one of the other members of the executive team are here in the Twin Cities. So it's kind of, co-based Twin Cities, Rochester. But there was a piece, I think you have the link, Steve, the news actually came out in the Milwaukee Business Journal.
Right, right. And for those people that don't know about Hardcore, they were at a mini demo at Intermedia Arts, 2 years ago? And they have either a patented or a patent pending liquid immersion, this viscous liquid. You basically immerse everything in the computer directly into this liquid. And therefore,
it's dielectric. It's dielectric fluid. It's what supercomputers have.
Precisely.
Yeah, it's the old Cray thing. Yeah.
And it's mighty tasty, with lemonade. So
yeah, listen.
What I liked about this,
just a second. We're going to preserve Phil in this liquid when he dies.
Oh, great!
And so we can have him on the show forever.
It'll be like Walt Disney, except he's going to be the dielectric fluid version.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But anyway, the name of this Hardcore Computer came from a focus in gaming. That's how this all started.
Right.
The two founders, one of whom has since left the direct involvement with the company, they were big gamers, and they did this liquid cooled machine for hardcore gamers. So that's the legacy of the name. But now they're definitely going after the data center market now. So the name has less tie-in than it used to. But
they're pretty,
anyway,
they're pretty cool
news.
Looking. Well, I wonder if we could do a Hackintosh, Tim. They're only $3,500. for one of these.
Strangely enough, I have some direct experience Hackintoshing this week, and it's a lot more difficult than you would think from looking at some of the walkthroughs that are online. Yeah, you have to have exactly the right hardware.
Okay.
Or it's really just a experience and frustration. So
okay,
and not a lot of the hardware that's out there, even though it's maybe Intel dual core or i5 or whatever, is compatible with Mac OS. So it's definitely doable though. I mean, if you have exactly the right hardware, it looks like it's pretty easy. And they strangely enough have these disks that allow you to boot the retail versions now of Snow Leopard, which is kind of crazy. So you actually use a Snow Leopard install disk to install it. But it's just not, in my experience, it's just not worth the trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, those hardcore computers are what? They're what, $3,000 to $4,000 bucks?
Yeah, like $3,500 I think they start.
Yeah, I mean,
they're pretty cool though.
Yeah, the new Mac Pros are that. You know, that yeah. sort of price tier as well.
So yeah, they started at like $2,400 to $2,500. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Might as well get the optimized version, I would think. And if there was a compelling price cost price relationship, like say on a laptop or a desktop, where you can buy a $600 computer and then Hackintosh it versus a $1,300 or $1,400 MacBook Pro. That may motivate you, but it's still difficult.
Right.
Anyway. What else is going on?
I got something before Phil jumps in. I don't mean to jump in here, Phil, but you're talking about Buzz. There's a really, really interesting piece in the investigative piece in the journal today, the Saturday Journal, on the web's new gold mine. Your secrets. It's a whole expose
into
how much data is being gathered on what you do as you surf the web. It's fascinating. It's a whole series of articles, and I would recommend. It's on the cover of the Weekend Journal. And,
well, you can also get to it right from TechMeme. I just went there, and so you can actually click and link right to the article without a paywall.
Yeah, so if you want some good weekend reading, my gosh, what they've been working on this for a long time. It's major look at what's going on. I noticed Comcast is one of the companies right up near the top that's grabbing so much data, but so is Microsoft and so is Google, and it's going to cause a huge amount of buzz.
Well, and there was also an article on TechMeme, I think Wednesday, about the 16 apps or some percentage of apps on the iPhone that are free and the kind of data they collect, that they have access to your contacts and all sorts of different things if you allow them to, see your location and so forth. And that's, when I had my tinfoil hat on, when I was really paranoid here a few years ago about all this stuff, I would write these blog posts and people would comment like, yeah, you're just a paranoid, would you just get off meth? But it was all about the kinds of tracking technologies. Going back to my vignette days, back in, let's say 2002, 2003, we had two partners. One was Autonomy, the search engine mm-hmm. company, and the other one was one called Virage. And Virage had the most amazing technology. They could take any digital video and they could do facial recognition, they could do speech to text, they could index the closed captioning track and do it by time code on the video. So they'd yep. sold this engine to all, Telemundo and CNN, BBC, all the major networks. And they would use it to catalog all their digital video content. So if you want to type in Ronald Reagan or your Jimmy Carter or whatever, it would pull up every instance of those two presidents, for example, in that, and even grab their facial recognition. Well, guess what? Autonomy is basically off the enterprise radar because their biggest customers are the NSA and the CIA. And guess who they bought? They bought Verage in 2004. Yep. And they're just off the radar. So, and then this whole information, you know, the total information awareness campaign that the government wanted to do. I don't think people really appreciate how these digital breadcrumbs of ours can be collated and indexed and cataloged and all of that. And so it's kind of nice to start to see this level of awareness come out.
Yep. Yep. Well, read that piece in the journal because I will. I'm still getting through it. It's a lot of stuff. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. I think somebody's behind me. Just a sec. Nope. No one's there.
Well, every time I start up that Mashable app, you know, and it asks for my location, I'm like, why does Pete Cashmore need to know my location?
Because Pete Cashmore needs to know.
So that's I always deny him. I say, no, you don't need to know my location.
So do you, Steve, do you have your, do you keep your location active on your phones?
GPS
active on your phone?
The GPS, yes. And I do it by, I base it on by app. And one of the reasons that I don't, like for example, Doc Searles, this blogger that I follow, you guys know.
Happy Doc birthday, Searles, Doc.
Oh, is that his birthday?
Birthday this week. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, so Doc has this thing about not tweeting or not blogging when he's in a specific location. And I do the same thing. I mean, if I'm going to be gone for, you know, 3 or 4 days with the family, I'm not tweeting, oh, this is absolutely fabulous. You know, we're up in Brainerd having a great time at the cabin, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not doing that. And it's because somebody could say, oh, I guess everyone's gone from the Borsch household. Let's go over there and target his house.
There's nothing there, guys. Trust me. I've been there.
Yeah,
so.
There isn't. Yeah.
I mean, I even rooted around when they were gone one time and there's just nothing there.
You didn't look in my closet. So I am very cautious about the sorts of things that I do participate in. And, you know, there are certain, like there's a couple of women friends of my daughter's that I have said to her that they've got to be a little careful about the stuff that they tweet, because if they had somebody lurking and stalking them, you'd know where they were. They're checking in at the coffee shop, and then they're over at, I mean, all you have to do is follow their Twitter feed and you know where they are. And that really concerns me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Phil.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say there's some positives though to all this location-based stuff on your phone. There's an app called Locale on Android that allows you to set all sorts of different parameters on your phone that's based upon your location. So for instance, it knows your home and it turns on your Wi-Fi, turns off your 3G, you know, might turn your ringer to a different ringer kind of thing.
And that's cool.
If you go to your office, let's say it goes to silent, and it's all automatic. It's all based upon where your phone is. And then you have all sorts of parameters you can choose. So stuff like that makes it better for the experience, I think, is good. But it's definitely from a privacy perspective, it's definitely also has that side of it. So like everything, it's a two-edged sword, I think.
Yeah.
What was the app you suggested again?
It's called Locale.
Okay.
And I think it's $10, I want to say, something like that. You should check it out. It's in the Android marketplace.
Oh, well, $10. I'm sorry, I can't go there. I'm only into it for the free apps.
Yeah. Oh, it's actually $10.99.
Of course it's $10.99.
And then they have a whole bunch of plugins that are $1.99 each. So
holy crap.
it's highly rated and it looks like a great app. And when I get 2.1 on my Android phone, I'll probably buy it because I can't run it on my current phone.
Yeah.
Wow. There you go.
Well, we should probably,
guys.
Yeah, we should probably wrap up this week.
What's ahead for the week? Boy. Yes, it is truly summertime. There's really nothing going on. But that's okay. You know, I think everybody needs to go out and get, you know, suck up some experiences so you can tweet about it. Okay. Oh, you know, the one thing I did want to ask you guys, Twitter, is it now essential?
It has been essential for some time now.
I don't think it has. I mean, for real people, not people like us. Is it essential? Like Facebook, like SMS?
You mean for mass consumer, or what do you mean by real people?
Real people. People, yeah. Not us.
No, it's not.
No, I don't think it is either.
It's not like Facebook and it's not like SMS.
Right. I think you could make more of a case of something like Foursquare or Gowalla is becoming more essential for real people.
Well, I ask this because I'm seeing more and more and more brands, including the Twitter and Facebook logos in their advertising,
yep.
Whether it's print or or video. I'm seeing more and more the F and the T. And I'm just wondering, because I believe that Twitter is still not a mainstream service. It's a very much a sort of an insider's deal. And there's an incredible awareness of Twitter, but very, very small use in comparison to that awareness. So I was just kind of curious what you guys thought.
Boy, but then you've got all the celebrities using it, and there's some pretty huge numbers. But granted, it's nowhere near the 500 million users of Facebook. How many millions are they saying for Twitter now? 8-10 million, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but those are people that have accounts but don't necessarily use them. What's the actual use of those accounts? It's very small.
Well, yeah, but this raises a question. Can people view what's going on Twitter without actually having an account? I've had an account for so long, I don't know. Do people actually have to sign up for an account in order to consume tweets, read tweets?
No, they can if they go to the Twitter homepage.
Yeah,
sure. They've got top tweets there, and you can go in and you can look for people. You can also do the search.
So that would be an interesting thing. Is there any way to measure that? Because, the numbers they quote for Twitter are just those that have signed up for accounts, but anybody can read it. And when you look at all these celebrities that have unbelievable amounts of followers, I mean, millions of followers, there's a ton of them. And I mean, they're not just movie star, TV star kind of people, all the sports celebrities. And I mean, you could definitely argue that it's gone mainstream on that level, as far as fans, fanatics of certain personalities.
Yeah, but to your point, Tim, when you mentioned Foursquare, what mm-hmm. I see certain people, like I'll just count my family, some of my family in that, who monitor things strictly for a payoff. So if there's a coupon or there's announcements about deals or that sort of thing, it's like, what do I get out of it? Rather than how do I participate and how do I connect with other people? It's a matter of what's the payoff for me.
Yeah, but I think that if you're in, say, a city that you don't live in and you don't know what's around you, using a Foursquare or a Gowalla to find a good place, or even Yelp for that matter.
Absolutely.
I mean that is a big benefit.
Yep.
I want a burrito in San Francisco. Which one should I go to? Right? I don't know. I've had some good burritos there, but but if I look on Yelp, let's say, or Urban Spoon, I find interesting places and places I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, but I still think that those location-based applications and services, unless there's a payoff, it's not going to go mainstream. It'll stop to the point of where people, those that are into social media, again, like us, that are not necessarily real people, will not use it unless there's a payoff. People just don't have that kind of time in their lives to say, here I am, look at me, I've got the mayor badge. They don't have that kind of time.
You know what's really a lot bigger than these location-based services, and a lot of people don't realize the numbers, is the flash sales and group buying stuff, the gilts and the Groupons. Do you have any idea how much revenue these things are producing? It's crazy. That, it's like I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars. These companies have taken off like mad, and now there's tons of copycats in the Groupon space. That's something that's very interesting to watch. That's mm-hmm. that's it's got way more going for it than any of these location-based services are really showing yet as far as business, you know, real growth. In fact, we've got a local player here, a startup that's doing something really cool with connecting Groupon kind of stuff with nonprofit and giving. And it's kind of Groupon meets the Girl Scouts. We'll have to talk about that one and maybe get him on in the future. I won't say the name of the company yet because it's still kind of stealthy, but this guy's been in the group buying space. He actually relocated here from Boston. And
his initials are,
I'm not here to hype him particularly, but he may be interested in telling us what he's working on as time goes on here. But I've learned through him about the amazing numbers in this whole flash selling and group buying space and guilt. That this is a huge, huge company that's just going nuts, you know.
Let's revisit location based. Yeah. Let's talk about innovative leaders next time we get together for the Minovate podcast. What do you say to that, guys?
That works.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, and maybe our we'll have a little more news about the local search going on for a Minnesota High Tech Association, speaking of innovative leaders. So
sounds good. We'll do that next time.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks. Yeah.
Take care.